now, you're tuned in to RBLR, the home of Tampa Bay's Reveler Sports.
This is the RBLR Rays Podcast. I'm your host, Zach Duff, along with my co-host, Pat Davenport. Pat, Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. Happy 2026. It's going to be a big one. I can feel it in my bones. It's either that or the flu that I've got. It's one of those two things that I'm feeling. It's either the Rays are going to have a really good year or I've got some kind of fever, and that's some kind of fever dream. And that might be some part of our discussion today. How are you doing, and how did you bring in 2026?
I brought in 2026 coughing, as I'm pretty sure most people did. It seems like everybody I have talked to in the last week is either currently sick or is getting over being sick. So it's something in the air right now. But I brought in the new year, watching the ball drop in New York, and just, you know, excited about the year to come. I'm not sure exactly yet what it's going to bring for Rays baseball, but it's been a good start to the year so far. So I'm excited.
Yeah. Fingers crossed. That's how it stays. Let's hope it stays that way. Yeah. I mean, we have not had much in terms of Rays news the past couple of weeks. No. I think the Rays front office have also taken Christmas off, which is fine. They're entitled to do that. I mean, it seems like everyone else has as well, because there's not been that much movement apart from the guys coming over from Japan. Apart from that, not much in the way of baseball news. So it's going to be the last of our player reviews today.
I think we have a couple other players to clean up, some smaller role players next week, but we'll be done with the major players this week. And that's because this week we're going to be talking about the bullpen. We do have a jam-packed show because we got a lot of guys to talk about. So we are so glad to have you all here with us on this Sunday morning. If you enjoy the show and you've come back a couple of times, do us a quick favor and check and see if you're subscribed. You may think you are, but just check down there in the box if you're watching us on YouTube, and subscribe if you're watching us on any of the other socials. Do us a huge favor and drop a follow. It would help us out a bunch. If you're here for the first time, welcome in. We appreciate you. We're gonna have a good show today, and we're gonna get right into it with, as we look kind of back at the bullpen of 2025. It's a bit of a weird exercise because the name that we normally start these kinds of conversations with is no longer on the team, and it's definitely a weird feeling.
Yeah, that is a weird feeling. I mean, Pete Fairbanks had another good year. I thought he led all of our relievers in WAR. Had a 2.83 ERA, put up 27 saves, like a really good Pete Fairbanks year, I would say. But he's gone. He's gone to the Miami Marlins. He got more money than he would have got if the Rays picked up his option, right?
Yeah, and all power to him, and all luck wish to him down in Miami. Hopefully we don't have to face him when we play them twice a year as we have been. But hope he has success. Great guy. It's a shame that he's kind of in the same boat. And I think I said this when we traded him, similar boat to Brandon Lauer. My sadness comes from, he was so close to really etching his name in the Rays, like, all-time leaders when it comes to relievers, and just ends up being just short of that. And that's kind of a bummer to me. It would have been cool to see, you know, more of these guys that were a part of this, you know, kind of run that we've been on, to etch their names even higher up into the leaderboards for the Rays all time. And just kind of a bummer that he wasn't able to do that.
It is. And again, we're really running short on the Rays 2020 World Series roster now.
Yeah.
It's McClanahan, because he made his debut in that World Series. Mm-hmm. And it's Yandy.
It's Yandy.
And I think that's it.
I think that's it.
So we're running really short on the players that got us to the World Series now.
Was Walls on that team?
I don't think so yet. I think because he got called up just before Wander did. Yeah. He got called up like a month before Wander did.
You're right.
Which it feels like a lifetime ago. it just goes to show what happens. Five seasons can change a team in a very big way. And when, you know, a guy making his debut first basemen are all that's left.
Yeah.
But Fairbanks was one of those guys that, like, he was maybe, he had produced a lot of value on the baseball field, but was definitely one of the more valuable press conferences you could get out of a Rays player as well. He would be unafraid to tell you how it was. He was, unfortunately, being a closer, it meant that often when he was getting the press conference, it was because he blew the save. It happened often for Pete, but if he blew the save, you were going to hear from him, and he was going to tell you how it was. And he felt like a bit of a leader in the clubhouse as well. So we are going to miss that, I think.
Yeah, we are. And that kind of leads us into the rest of the bullpen, which is the big question. And we'll be kind of talking about it the whole time as we're talking about the bullpen is, who's going to take his place? There's a couple of candidates. And one that is probably the most interesting, I would say most interesting candidate, just because of what his 2025 looked like, is Edwin Uceda, the man who led all Rays pitching, at least for relievers, in innings pitched with 76, ended the year with a 3.79 ERA and a 3.69 FIP, ended with a 0.9 F4. But just to look at that stat line does not really tell you the full story of his season.
No, absolutely not. It was, to use a football or soccer cliche, it was a game of two halves for Edwin Uceda. He really struggled in the early parts of the season. He was kind of erratic with his command. He seemed to not be the lockdown reliever that we saw from him in 2024. And he was a bit of a, when you saw him coming in a high leverage situation late in a game, you'd like kind of tense up a little bit and be like, oh gosh, what version of Uceda are we going to get today? However, in that second half, that completely changed.
It did. And I've got a couple of stats to show you about that. Looking at the first half of the season for Edwin Uceda, March through June, literally one of the worst relievers in baseball. You can see if you're listening on audio, I've got his ranks in XERA, FIP, strikeouts, F4, home runs, and hard hit percentage. And outside of strikeouts, where he was, you know, upper middle of the pack in strikeouts with 42, every other rank is in the 120s or 130s, and there's only 137. That are on this list, and very tough showing for him through March and June. Some like really embarrassing numbers, including a negative 0.4 F4, getting hard hit almost 50% of the time, 46.2%, and dead last in XERA. So he wasn't even being, you couldn't even make the argument that, oh, he's just getting unlucky. Like, no, he was getting exactly what he deserved. The high FIP also, you know, kind of, you know, leads to that. And then all of a sudden, you turn the calendar to July. In July through September, he's all of a sudden a top 10 reliever in baseball. Eighth in XERA, 12th in FIP, number one in strikeouts in the back half of the year. Number four in F4 with 1.3, only gave up 3 home runs. And his hard hit rating was down to 26.7%, which is good for second in MLB in that time period. You will not find a more stark stat difference between the first and half. I don't think anywhere else in MLB.
No, it's crazy. I mean, to cut a hard hit percentage down by almost half is absolutely incredible work. And it wasn't just good results. It was just utter dominance to lead all relievers and strikeouts. That's dominance, right? I think even the home runs numbers, you kind of had to hold your hands up a little bit because you go, well, we were in Steinbrenner, and like how many home runs were because of mistakes and how many were kind of getting Steinbrennered. You'd have to go back and look at them all. But yeah, a complete turnaround. And you know, I think we've talked before about Uceda being a confidence pitcher, a guy that's like, when he's rolling is really good. I remember there was a period in late 2024 where he blew a save and it was like his first real hiccup of the season. Like he had a nasty meltdown and then he got really kind of heated with the rest of the team and had to be benched for a couple of games. He's a guy that needs confidence and needs to be cruising. But what do you think was the factor that caused this kind of turnaround and regaining of confidence for Uceda?
Well, that's a really good question. And I think when we talk about confidence for relievers, a lot of that confidence comes from your faith in the guy calling the games. which for the first half of the season was two guys. And for the second half of the season, basically, was three other guys. And when you look at the difference between those two, it's just as stark. With Rortvedt and Jansen calling the games, catching, 35 innings pitched, 5.4 ERA, 43 strikeouts, 16 walks, 7 home runs given up. With all the other catchers, which is, you know, Tice, Fiducia, and Fortes, 41 innings pitched, 2.63 ERA, 60 strikeouts, 11 walks, 4 home runs. So that's more strikeouts in more innings, fewer walks in more innings, fewer home runs in more innings. I'm not going to blame it all necessarily on them, but I think if you're looking for catalysts and you talked about confidence, having that confidence in your backstop, I think, is an important thing. And I think it's just pretty clear that, you know, whatever you want to say about Rortvedt and Jansen, they were not helping our pitchers by the time they were done.
No, and I don't think they were helping them for two reasons. One, I think their game calling was up for debate as well, first of all. But that's a hard thing to put a measure on. But I think the pitching staff was better with the other catchers in general. But for me, it was the framing. It was the framing. Yeah. I think especially with relievers, there's a lot of fine margins, right? Because you have one bad outing as a reliever and it can destroy your ERA, right? Because you're only pitching 60, 70 innings a season. So every pitch really matters when you're a reliever. And a lot of the times your pitches are going to be trying to be on the border of the strike zone. Because that's where you're either going to get your swings and misses, or you're going to get chases, or you're most likely to get soft contact. You're going to be aiming for the borders. If you're going to be doing that a lot, you need guys that can steal you some strikes at the edges, right? Yeah. Or more importantly, don't lose you strikes on pitch on the edges. And Rortvedt and Jansen did not frame well last year. Rortvedt is an okay, so-so framer, but Jansen, extremely bad. Was really bad, particularly last year with the Rays. And I think the fact that Uceda felt like he wasn't getting those pitches on the edges and therefore had to come further in the middle to get his strikes didn't help him by any stretch.
No, and then you look back to those hard hit numbers in the first half of the year. And I think you said it perfectly. I think those two are very correlational there. Feeling like he wasn't getting the outside edge, especially with the fastball, then having to bring that into the zone more, and it got clobbered. And, you know, when you talk about kind of then projecting forward into next season, the guys on the right on this graphic are the guys outside of Tice, are the guys that are going to be catching him going into 2026, which I think, you know, gives me a lot of confidence because Uceda is a strikeout pitcher. He's always been a strikeout pitcher. And so having guys that can maximize that part of his game by calling a good game, by framing better, is going to allow him to succeed more. So tale of two halves for him, but I give him a lot of credit for being able to pull it back and get back to a respectable, good season of relief pitching by the end.
Yeah, 100%. Do you think he's the closer? Like if you were Kevin Cash and I was Cal Snyder and we were sitting day one of spring training and they were like, right, nobody does a breakout. Nobody gets hurt. Who are we giving the ninth inning to? Would it be Edwin Uceda?
I think it would be. And to me, it's between him and the next guy I think we're going to talk about, which is Garrett Clevenger. I think those are the two guys that it's between. Garrett had the better season, I think, than Edwin last year. He also pitched about 15 fewer innings. So I tend to think right now that I would rather have Uceda be the everyday closer because I feel like he has the bandwidth from an innings perspective to do that and let Clevenger be your fireman. Because you get the idea that you're coming in the highest leverage moments in the game, which means you may not pitch every day because we may not need you every day because we may not be in these super high leverage moments every single day. But when we are in those moments, we need you. And I kind of think that's what the role that Clevenger has been occupying. And I kind of like to keep him there. And I think that Uceda, you know, with the bounce back performance and kind of the things we've talked about, I think has earned at least a shot at the closer spot to open the season. And that's what my expectation is, but there's still a lot of time between now and the beginning of the season.
Right, because if you say that unravels during spring training, you wouldn't want him there, right? No. Because like we said, he's a guy that kind of works a lot on his momentum and his current momentum. Yeah. So I think I agree with you. Relievers are so volatile in general. It's hard to bank on any reliever on any given year. And it's why they tend not to get years on their, right. on their free agent deals. And he, like, so the best thing you can do with relievers is go, okay, what have they done for me lately? And what he's done for us lately is be, yeah, like you said, a top five reliever in baseball. And really quietly, too.
Yes.
So let's keep him the best kept secret in baseball right now and unleash him as the secret weapon in the ninth inning. But it's good to have that option, which we'll talk about in a second in Garrett Clevenger. But before we do, would you, how would you grade Uceda?
So I was thinking about this morning, and it's an interesting one because you could legitimately say that his first half of the year was like an F minus and his second half of the year was like an A plus. So like logically then that would grade out to like a C. But I feel better giving him like a B minus, maybe even a solid B, only because I put a lot of value in being able to turn it around. Like that's hard to do as a reliever, especially to totally flip the narrative and get back to the way you were pitching previously. I give him a lot of credit for that, especially, and I also give him credit for it didn't end up mattering because we didn't make the postseason, but he pitched his best innings at the end of the season, which if you're going to pick a time, that's the time. And he was money down the stretch. And so it's just a shame that he didn't, they weren't able to really pitch meaningful innings in the postseason or even in like play-in games, really. We didn't get there, but he's the guy that you'd like to have there. So even if something like this happens again next year, if he can do this where he maybe has a slow start but finishes strong, I'll take that. So I'm going to give him, I think, a B minus.
Yeah, a B minus sounds fair. I'm willing to go with a B minus too because, again, the second half for him included more innings as well. So the bulk of his workload was the good stuff. He had more of the good stuff than he did the bad stuff. So I think B minus is fair.
Yeah. So good season from him. More to come on him. We'll especially as we get closer to spring training, and we'll have a lot to say now and even more to say later as we get closer to spring training about the next guy on this list, Garrett Clevenger, who, as we said, had a really, really good season. Pitched 61 and a third innings to the tune of a 2.35 ERA and a 3.59 FIP, ending with a 0.7 F4. Was definitely the guy that was brought in to put out the fire. Only had two saves on the year. He wasn't usually the last guy out there, but he was the guy that was brought in high leverage moments, and he excelled.
Oh boy, did he. Yeah. I mean, and he, all the underlying numbers kind of match the results too. I mean, whiff percentage 97th percentile, K percentage 96th percentile, chase percentage 82nd percentile, XERA also very high, X batting average high. Like everything about the underlying numbers is really, really good. He is a funky lefty that has really good stuff. He's a mixture of funk and stuff, which makes him super deceptive and super hard to pick up on. From an angle that you rarely see as a hitter too. I think he's earned some higher leverage now that Fairbanks is gone. And I think he was maybe top to bottom the Rays' best reliever on an appearance-to-appearance basis.
Yeah.
It's just a shame that he did have a bit of a stint on the IL, right?
He did. And that's why, you know, I think he's a guy that can go more than 61 innings, but that's where he ended up. Like you said, because of the IL stint. And, you know, it's not something that we expect to be – we don't expect it to necessarily be a recurring thing with him. He's been pretty healthy. So it's not a huge issue. But it's why – it's a part of my argument for him staying in the role that he is in is I would rather get 60 elite innings from Clevenger in the moments that I need him the most – then try to stretch him out as the everyday closer and push him to like 72, 73, 74 innings pitched. I'm okay leaving Uceda in that role and instead having Clevenger be your fireman. And, you know, there may be moments where, you know, he pitches the ninth because that's the most critical moment and you feel better about him on a given day than Uceda. And I think, you know, right now he only had about 2 saves last year. I expect him to get maybe more like somewhere between 5 and 10 saves this year. I expect Uceda to get closer to that 15 to 20 range. But we'll see. That's just kind of my view on it right now. But if I will say that if they decided to make Clevinger the closer, it would not concern me.
No, I completely agree. And perhaps they do end up going to like a closer by committee type thing. So when you're facing, you know, the Yankees and you've got Aaron Judge and let's say hypothetically Paul Goldschmidt coming up in the ninth. You'd go with Uceda, right? Because you want your righty on righty. But then if you're facing the Dodgers and you got Freeman and Ohtani coming up, then you might want to go with Clevinger instead. I don't mind kind of divvying up the closer role based on matchups. And then maybe, and you just, because the Rays have been known to in the past not have a closer like Fairbanks kind of worked out to be. And going with just groups of, like, these are our high leverage guys. And sometimes high leverage could even mean the sixth inning, right?
Correct. Like, yes.
Yeah. And then these are your medium leverage and these are your low leverage. Because the Rays love to use, like, they went through a phase where they'd bring in, say, Nick Anderson in the top of the seventh because the starter walked the first 2 guys in a close game. So they brought him out and went straight to Nick Anderson because they said, hey, there's no point in saving our best reliever for a save opportunity that might not even get there. So they might go back to that kind of approach to things as opposed to naming a closer outright. But yeah, Clevinger, outstanding, absolutely outstanding. I don't think he's put a foot wrong in a Rays uniform other than like occasional health blips.
Yeah. And for those reasons, as we're looking at grading Garrett Clevinger's season, I think it's an easy A for me. I don't really have much trouble. He's one of the of the guys that are easy A's. He's maybe the easiest one with it. Like there's just no bad side to him. He was just really good.
Yeah. I think an A works for me. I like Clev and I hope we get another good year out of him next year.
Yeah. And so to kind of round out the trilogy of guys that might be the closer is a guy who is a little bit different than these other two, especially in terms of just like raw results in a Rays uniform. And that's Griffin Jacks, who came over in a big trade during the season, was a buzzer beater move. And one that I think surprised a lot of us, comes over, pitches 18 innings to the tune of a 4 ERA, but only a 3.69 FIP and a 0.2 F4. It's obvious when you look at his stat line over the full season last year. He was very good in a Twins uniform. Obviously not so good coming over to the Rays. I don't necessarily think we're going to see more of Rays Jacks. I think we're going to, in a full season, get closer to what he was with the Twins. But definitely leads to some interesting conversations about where he fits in this bullpen going into 2026.
Yeah. The weird thing is, all of his kind of ability to get strikeouts and having the stuff and the swing and miss was all the same when he came over to the Rays. He still had huge strikeout rates. He still had huge chase rates, but he was walking way more guys.
Yeah.
That was the big difference. And I think this comes down to the volatility of relievers, where sometimes they will just go through a stretch where things are not working. And I think, unfortunately, he did that as soon as he came over to the Rays. But there was so many underlying things to like about Griffin Jacks, even to the point where people were banding about going, hey, are they going to convert this guy to a starter next year? You don't do that unless you see stuff there. So while the performance wasn't great for Jacks in 18 innings, right? That's like 3 starts worth, right? Last year, I think the jury's still out on him. And it'll be interesting to see how he gets used. I think you're right, though, that I wouldn't use him as the closer by default next year. You'd have to like see some collapses or injuries to Uceda and Clevinger first. But it'll be interesting to see how they use him. Would it be for multi innings? Would it be for just 1 inning? Would it be for high, medium leverage? Would it be for extended opens, like one trip through the lineup? Will it be like, how do you, I think he's the most interesting reliever to watch next year, because I think the door is open to what he could be more than anyone else.
Yeah, I think they're going to let him earn what he can earn. You know, he's going to get obviously a big trade piece, so he's going to get his opportunities. And I think he's earned them. He's been good every season, basically, that he's been up in the majors. He's either been good or really good, outside of his sort of first season where he was struggled a little bit. But the last three seasons, he's been excellent for this one. And so, you know, I expect him to get an opportunity to prove that he still is that guy this season. And again, the fact that you have two guys that you could maybe argue are in front of him on the totem pole, I think takes some pressure off of him and allows him to just try to figure out, you know, what were the missing pieces last year and get back to that. There's a lot of things that could have, you know, played into it, you know, getting traded midseason, having to learn new catchers. And even like when he came over, there were even catchers that were there when he was there and then left. Like, and there's quite a lot going on there. So I will give him a little bit of grace on that and say that, you know, let's see if he can, with a little bit more continuity of a full off season and then a full spring training, a ramp up, see if he can't recapture his 2023 form, 2024 form, and put together a really nice season. And I think he slots in for me comfortably behind Fairbanks and Uceda, at least to start the season. But like you said, if he gets to the highs, you know, of his, you know, his 2023 season in particular was, or excuse me, 2024 season was excellent. He pitching to a 2.03 ERA and a 2.6 F4. So if he can get back there somehow, and that was over a full, you know, 71 innings pitch season that season was. So if he can get back to there, well, then now you have a three-headed monster. But as it you know, stands going into the season, I think he is likely to be a first guy out of the bullpen, where you want to continue, you know, if you've had a good starting pitching performance or you want to recover from a bad one, he's a good guy to get first out because he's got some nasty stuff to throw off hitters. I that's where I expect him to start the season, but with the potential to really move into high leverage as if he can, you know, bring back some of that excellent performance from previous years.
Yeah, all really good points there. I think all the stuff is there for him to be good again next year. I really do. I don't see any, like, apart from the walk percentage and the strike percentage going down, I don't see any other red flags. And command with raised pitches, I don't get too concerned about.
Yeah.
I trust Kyle Snyder to work the magic. And he's going to get some high leverage reps, right? Because he's worked good to Team USA.
Yes.
For the World Baseball Classic.
That's as far as I know. Yeah.
Yeah, so he will get an opportunity to work some medium to high leverage opportunities there. And that means he can maybe start the season on a better stride than what he started the Rays year on. I think, unfortunately, yeah, it is like a C minus, right, for the grade.
It is, but, unfortunately.
So, but, you know, we'll see you next year. It's fine.
Cool. I'm not panicking. One, you know, bad 18 inning stretch. If we judged everybody off of 18 inning stretches, be a rough business to be in. It'd be a rough business, even rougher than it already is for relievers.
Yeah, because imagine if we based 18 inning sample sizes on the guy we traded away for Griffin Jacks, Taj Bradley. There'd be times where we were giving him the Cy Young, and there'd be times where we are like, how is this man allowed to throw a baseball?
Yeah. And, you know, volatility is something that, you know, we all experience in our lives, and we sometimes experience it even in our wardrobe. And when we are trying to find some certainty, trying to find something that we have some confidence in, the easy place to go is shop.rbmrsports.com, where you can use promo code Flappy, FLAPPY, for 10% off your entire order of the best merch out there, inspired by your favorite Tampa Bay sports teams, Rowdies, Bucks, Lightning, Rays, Sun. It's all on there. Bucks are watching other people play, to see if we could find a way to make it into the playoffs. The Lightning helped me out, or maybe didn't help me out. I was with some in-laws that were Panthers fans and caused some frustration in the home when the Lightning beat the Panthers over the Christmas break, so good for them. Go to our shop at rblrsports.com, promo code Flappy, FLAPPY, 10% off your entire order.
That is a call that you will never regret making. You pick up the phone, pick up the dugout phone, make the call. Any products you can bring out there, it's like a stable of guys that can throw 98 miles an hour.
Couldn't say it better myself. On to a guy who I don't think maybe ever seems a little bit rude. Mason Engler, I don't know that he's ever thrown 99 miles per hour, but he sure did throw 44 and two thirds innings last year, which I don't think was on anybody's bingo card. Going into that season. And he was pretty good. Like I think he's one of the most like unsung parts of this season. 3.83 ERA, 3.14 FIP, 0.6 F4, and now projects as a middle reliever for us for this season. Mason Engler, pretty good.
Yeah. Yeah. Good season for what could be described as a kitchen sink.
That's what that was the words in my head. Yeah.
Yeah, kitchen sink type pitcher where he throws six different pitches, according to Baseball Savant anyway. He'll throw anything. Like, he will throw absolutely anything. He threw a curve, he threw a slurve, sinker, cutter, four-seam, changeup. And I'm not going to lie, most of the underlying numbers don't actually speak to him being that good. There's something that can be said to just throwing so many pitches that the hitter never knows which one the next one is. Even if all of those pitches are like, eh, right?
Yeah.
That's what Yu Darvish has done for the past 5 years.
It is. And one of the other things that is really important when you're that kind of a pitcher is you don't walk guys. And if you're looking for an underlying number that's a positive for him, 5.9 walk percentage. That's a good number.
Right, 100%. With relievers, the key thing is don't do it to yourself. Never do it to yourself. So if you don't hurt yourself, it greatens your chances immediately. So Mason Engler, shout out to the maybe surprise kind of story of the bullpen last year. And with Manuel Rodriguez still out and Hunter Biggie's kind of status, I think he's got a sure place in the bullpen next year.
He does, and I'm okay with that. He's shown himself to be a guy. I don't really want him throwing many more innings than like 40 or 50 innings. I want him – that's good. That's good, buddy. I'm good with you right there. But if he could does that again, he's shown that he is totally capable of doing that and doing a good job. So more power to him.
Yeah. Yeah, 100%. Can we talk about – Brian Baker? I know he's not next on the list, but I really want to talk about Brian Baker.
We can. Really fast grade for Mason Engler.
B.
B sounds good. I'd give him a B+ because I don't think he was expected to have as much of a role as he did, and he was really good. So I'm going to give him a B+. But that's about right.
Fine. Yeah, cool.
Let's talk about Brian Baker.
Brian Baker is such a weird one. First of all, we got him and Slater DeBrun for free.
Yeah.
Can we just – that's not true. But we – if you girl math it, boy math it, we got him and Slater DeBrun for free. And he turned up and was initially really bad.
Yeah.
First like 10 outings for him, really bad. And then suddenly, he's really good. He was really good down the stretch. The problem was, it's weird because he was still getting loads of swing and miss stuff. He wasn't walking many guys. He was striking out a lot of guys. But for some reason, every time he got hit, he got absolutely barreled.
Yeah.
Yeah. He was really struggling to keep the ball on the ground. He's a fly ball pitcher. And that's fine because most of his stuff doesn't actually break downwards that much. He has a real lack a vertical break as a pitcher. So being a flyball pitcher is fine. And this is why I think he's due to be very good next year. He was a flyball pitcher in the throes of the wind.
Yeah.
He literally had to he threw his ball up into the wind every single time.
Yeah.
In Steinbrenner Field, which had the craziest winds of any MLB stadium. So I think with the aircon on, if you want to use the conspiracy theory where we blow the aircon really like far in when opponents hit a fly ball, that's going to work to Brian Baker's advantage. So while I don't think it worked for him this year, I'm going to make him my official kind of sneaky breakout pick for next year.
Okay. The only thing that makes me nervous about him, because I hear everything you just said and I'm willing to buy into it. The only thing that concerns me is he had a hard hit rate of 49.4%. And obviously he got it down a little bit, but I mean, that's quite bad. That would be good for third worst on the team behind Hunter Biggie and Kevin Kelly, who, you know, Hunter Biggie was okay. Kevin Kelly was not okay this last season. But both
I don't think those guys
have potential.
Yeah. And I think being hit that much, that bad, is not sustainable.
Okay.
I think, I don't think, if he even cuts that down to like 35%, he's a good pitcher.
Yeah. And most of our guys that we consider are, you know, high leverage guys are in the 40% range. So if he can get it down to the 40 to 30% range, you say it is at 36%. Jax is at a 43.2%. Fairbanks is at 42%. Clevinger at a 41%. So
I don't believe it's sustainable that he's getting shelled as much as he is. I think bit of bad luck, a bit of like mistimed pitches, sure, some mistakes, but I think his command is good enough that it's not sustainable. So keep an eye out. And if he gets DFA'd in May, then you can all come for me and tell me. But I think Brian Baker is one to watch, and I really think he's going to sneak under a lot of Rays fans' radars going into 2026.
Sounds good. Great for his season with us last year.
D plus.
I was going to say C minus, but yeah, it's not great.
After everything I said, D plus.
Yeah, speaking of not great, let's talk about a guy that caught a lot of flack last season. Pitched 39 2/3 innings, was a guy that we like a lot, but was in fact quite bad. Pitched to a 5.9 ERA, Kevin Kelly. Tough to watch it happen. Had a bit of an injury trouble and just never really turned it back around. The one thing I will say about him, xFIP, 3.84. So I'm trying to leave room for him to turn it back around at the Trop. I really want to see him turn it back around because I just like him. He's a fun story. I want to see him be good again.
Yeah. He still wasn't walking, guys.
Yeah.
But he was just getting absolutely smashed around.
Just annihilated.
Yeah. I guess the other thing was, like, he used to have elite ground ball rates. He kind of had so-so ground ball rates, and that was kind of the difference.
Yep.
I'm hoping that he can, through the, you know, pitch of volatility, turn that around. He gets an F, we'll see. Unfortunately.
Yeah, it's a tough one. I hate to give him the F because I really do believe in Kevin Kelly. So, Kevin Kelly, if you're watching, I'm sorry. But let this be a moment where we say, we believe in you. At least I believe you. I think
we do.
I believe in him too. We believe in you. We believe you can do better than this.
When he was getting called to be DFA'd, I did say, let's not do that.
As did I. I think we both said, hey, let's not do that. We think this guy's got some juice. He had an injury. He just never really put it all back together. Kevin Kelly, we believe in you, but you get an effort.
We believe in you.
Unfortunately.
Yeah. Listen, you were ill. You missed a whole semester's worth of lessons. So, like, you know, when it came to the tests, you didn't really know what you were talking about. But then just show up to lessons this time.
Yeah. Somebody who did show up, and we didn't necessarily expect him to have to show up, is Cole Sulcer, who pitched 22 2/3 innings for the Rays this last year. And I don't know if you guys are aware. I don't know if anybody knows this. But he pitched a 1.99 ERA and a 2.69 FIP and a 0.4 F4 in those innings. So I don't know if you guys know this, but Cole Sulcer's good.
Yeah, I guess. I didn't think that. I had to double take when you said that. I was like,
it's true. You can go look on Fangraphs.
Yeah,
it's there.
I did, and I was like, oh wow, he really was good. It feels like Cole Sulcer rides the shuttle bus from LA to St. Petersburg, and it's like where like Cole Salsa, this is gonna sound bad, but he's like a child of divorce, and us and the Dodgers take turns with custody of Cole Salsa. Yeah, I don't know why it's always us and the Dodgers. I think Eric Neander, and he was part of the divorce between Andrew Friedman and the Rays, I think.
He's on the Mets for a bit too.
Yeah, he was on the Mets for a bit. And you know who always seems to be picking up Mets relievers? The Rays.
That's true.
But there's clearly some kind of alignment in thinking. I think this is the first time he's been good, though, in his five stints with the Rays.
Yeah, if you look at his previous stints, not quite as good. But you know what? We're not grading the last couple seasons of Cole Sulser. We're grading this last season. All credit to him. There's some things that he has not done well in previous years. Well, his strikeout numbers are roughly what they've been before. The thing that he really improved on this last season was not walking guys. And if you're going to pick an area to improve, not walking guys is a really good area to pick.
Yeah, 100%. That's the one thing you have the most control over. He also really, like, never got barreled.
Yeah.
Cole Sulser's, I don't know how this happened. He had a 1.6 barrel percentage last year, which is unbelievably low, right? He didn't pitch enough innings to qualify. But that probably would have been the lowest of any pitcher. And then, alternatively, he had a 47.5 hard hit percentage, which is one of the lowest. So he got hit really hard, but never barreled.
Yeah.
Weird. I think he's a regression candidate. I'm sorry. I've never been convinced by Cole Sulser. But you know what? I'm glad he contributed. I think he's a guy that will get a shot in spring training.
Yeah.
And I think he might start the year on the team. But I think, yeah. Is on like fraud watch, and if there was like a DFA to be made in the bullpen, I think he's the first one.
Yeah, but
sorry, Cosmos.
But I'm giving him an A-, for last season for coming up. You didn't pitch enough innings to get an A, but for what you did, you get an A-. Good stuff.
Yeah, good year, and a spot on the roster for next year for sure.
Yeah, 100%. That sort of takes us to two guys who did not pitch enough innings really to get a complete grade, I don't think. Although Manuel Rodriguez did pitch 30 innings and was really good in those innings. And, you know, Biggie was also quite good in the innings that he pitched. But both of those guys combined for a total of 45 innings because they had some serious injuries. Biggie in particular had a really nasty injury that we are very grateful that he has recovered from and seems to be doing well. But unfortunately, Manuel's injury was maybe the worst of all. And we don't know when we're going to see him back, but both of those guys are awesome. And we just hope that they are fully recovered and ready to go as soon as possible.
100%. That Biggie one was super scary. But yeah, it seems like all indications are he'll be ready to play in spring training, which is really good to hear. Yeah. Manny Rodriguez, probably, if anything, maybe at the very back end of the season in 2026,
if anything.
But again, I think we got to go in with the expectation that he's not going to pitch in 26 and 2027 is going to be his year, which is a shame because he was really putting something together and looked to be the closer of the future.
And I still view him as that. But it'll just be a question of if he can come back and be what he was. Because if he can come back and be what he was, he's the closer of the future. He has the makeup, has the stuff, has the confidence. He was kind of the best kept secret that the Rays had this last season. And it was just I cannot tell you how much of a bummer it was. Like, I felt like so much potential was just ripped away from us when he got hurt.
Yeah, 100%. And Biggie has really good stuff too.
He does.
The command is still lacking a bit of stuff to be desired. And his fastball is very straight and true.
Yeah.
While very fast, it's straight and true. So he's got to mix his pitches well, I think, to make that work. So there's a lot of potential. I think Biggie has a really high ceiling, but we've yet to kind of see that happen. And we want it to work because he's the next piece up in that Isaac Paredes trade now that the Morel one hasn't worked. So we need him to work.
We do. Speaking of high potential, the last guy that I want to talk about today is maybe high potential personified. And I'm talking about him here in the reliever portion because I don't really know what we're going to do with him. I don't really know what his future is right now. It's Joe Boyle. He pitched 14 innings in relief last year to the tune of a 1.93 ERA and a 0.2 F4. It was very good. As a starting pitcher, on the other hand, not so good. 5.68 ERA, a 4.50 FIP, 0.3 F4 over 38 innings.
Yeah. He got better. So when he came over from the A's, he was the stuff that doesn't know where it's going guy. Like,
yeah,
insane stuff, has no clue where it's going. He's gotten better. In 2025 that he was at 24. Still got a ways to go, though, 100%. He still is walking a lot of guys. And I think at this point his reputation is preceding him a little bit, where or preceding him, where I think if I'm a hitter and I know Joe Boyle's on the mound, I'm like, I'm taking until I get two strikes.
Yeah.
Because let's see if he can throw two strikes.
Yeah.
And I think that's the approach because he's still not quite 100% there yet where he's throwing strikes enough that hitters are going to just start free swinging on him.
Yeah, and I think Joe Boyle would love, you know, he should love if people want to take that approach to him because if he can get to two strikes, he can put you away. He's got the stuff. It's just about getting to two strikes.
Yeah, and I'm hoping with what you said about the catches when we at the start of the show when we talked about Usada could be of benefit to Joe Boyle. I think now that we traded Shane Baz, he's got a real opportunity to get a slot in the rotation.
Yeah.
Especially with Shane McClanahan's health status kind of up in the air as well. Maybe he follows Shane McClanahan open.
Yeah. I mean, right now, projected rotation, and this is just what Fangraphs projects, and we're going to do our own projections, of course. But Drew, Ryan, Shane McClanahan, Mattson, Joe Boyle, with obviously Ian Seymour, who we, you know, he's more of a starter, in my view, kind of in the waiting of, you know, what could he be? You know, I think he's more of a starter. I tend to believe that Seymour will get the start at the major league level as a starter over Boyle, and that Boyle will be allowed a little bit more time. He's still only 26 years old, still be given a little bit more time to try to refine that and then brought up when he's ready.
Yeah, I think that's probably the call, barring health, like, you know, assuming everyone's healthy. I think Boyle, but you could get Boyle could make his way onto the major league roster as a swing man, where, like, in an attempt to limit McClanahan's innings, maybe they do one through the lineup each on his days, or there might be a time where Boyle opens for someone, or your favorite thing is when a starter doesn't have it, you bring in your fireman.
Yeah.
So I think Boyle, because he's so flexible in what his role could be, will end up on the major league roster. But as what really depends on, I guess, McClanahan's health.
Yeah.
And what else the bullpen is doing.
Yeah. And so for me as a reliever, you know, he probably would earn something closer to like a, you know, a B or a B plus, but as a player in a performance last year, I think it's gotta be a C, and I need to see more going into 2026.
Yeah. See more by seeing less of Ian Seymour.
Put it on a t-shirt.
Yeah. I don't want to put on a t-shirt that we need to see less of Ian Seymour. I like Ian Seymour.
I like Ian Seymour. Maybe see less of Steven Matz. I still don't know how to feel about that. I'm still not.
Yeah, I don't know. Him and Joe Boyle are both like, what are we doing with those guys?
Yeah.
They could leave or stop.
Yeah, I think the best case scenario is that Seymour and Boyle are both pitching in the majors as starters, and Matz is a long reliever. I think if we get that outcome, maybe not best from payroll perspective, because we kind of paid Steven Matz a lot of money. But I think, you know, from my perspective, I think that's the best outcome. But we will see. It'll be a long season to get to that point. But we will see.
Yeah. Overall, I thought the bullpen did quite well this year. I think it's weird, though, because in terms of actual results, they were kind of like, okay, decent.
Yeah.
Like between that 15 and 10, like top half, but not in the like upper echelon. But in terms of expected, like expected ERA, expected FIP, all that. They're all in the and a strikeout rate, walk rate. They're all really high ranking in all of those things. So, like,
yeah,
they were doing all of the stuff well. They got BABIPed a little bit. They got Steinbrenner a little bit. And I have full confidence. It's hard to worry about a Rays bullpen at any given time in the Neander era.
Yeah, it feels like we just kind of because if you look at the numbers and how they stack up on the leaderboards, just go to Fangraphs and put on the team sliders and as relief pitchers and just kind of play around there. The Rays are grading out to like a top 10 bullpen, and like almost right. every statistic. And so it's like it feels like we sleptwalked to a top 10 bullpen in baseball.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, since 2019, the Rays are the most used bullpen in baseball.
Yeah.
Let me be clear there. But in terms of like walks allowed per nine, lowest in baseball over the past 6 years. They're in the That's top crazy. Half in home runs allowed per nine.
Yeah.
Strikeouts per nine, they're exactly in the middle, interestingly.
Because they feel like they have a mix of guys. They have their strikeout guys, and they also have their ground ball and fly ball guys.
Yeah, I mean, their bullpen ERA since 2019 is third in baseball, behind only the Dodgers and the Guardians.
Yeah.
Their expected ERA is second since 2019, behind only the Dodgers. Their FIP is fifth. Their XFIP is sixth. And their WAR from the bullpen is third. So they've had the third best bullpen in the last 6 years. And, you know, the Guardians had some real weapons in that bullpen. You know, they had Andrew Miller and the likes of those guys. And then, you know, the Dodgers, they buy a bullpen every year. They've just bought Edwin Diaz. Yeah. So to be, and we do it with just like the names you've never heard of.
Yeah, like how many of the guys that have been in the bullpen in that span do you think the average Major League Baseball fan could name that isn't an AL East fan? Like if you just pull out a Padres fan, who can they name? Pagan maybe, maybe Jason Adam, and then maybe Pete Fairbanks.
Right.
And those say that because those guys actually went to the Padres, not because they would know those guys. But that's what I'm saying. Yeah. Like unless somebody went to your team, you probably know Pete Fairbanks, and that's probably it.
Yeah, and like, how many of them would know that since 2019? Let's say, do you know who's pitched the third most innings as a reliever since 2019
for the Rays?
Yeah, Jalen Beeks.
Jalen Beeks.
Yeah.
Jalen Beeks and his weird delivery.
Yeah. I mean, he pitched more innings than Jason Adam. Like, how if you go up to a random Rays fan, would they tell you that Sean Armstrong was a key part of our success for a bit?
I would hope that we would. I hope that they respect Armstrong by name, Armstrong by nature.
Where's the Ryan Thompson believers?
Right here.
And where's my Josh Fleming? Guy.
Josh Fleming. I love Kittredge. Big Kittredge guy.
Kittredge. Yeah, Kittredge is a key part as well. Oliver Drake. I was a big fan of him.
Oliver Drake. Great name.
Yeah, the Drake. BA loved that guy.
Yeah.
He had the weird splitter that went viral.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, loved that guy. Who is your favorite obscure Rays reliever? You'll have to let us know in the comments.
We'd love to hear from you guys. And we hope that you have enjoyed the show. If you did enjoy the show and want to hear more from us, we're going to be here all offseason talking Rays baseball. And we appreciate all of you who are on this journey with us heading into 2026. If you want to do us a huge favor, if you did enjoy the show, drop us a follow or drop us a subscribe. Check to make sure you are subscribed and you are following. You may think you are and you're not. Do us a huge favor. Helps us out a whole bunch. And just let's just know that you enjoy the show. We're going to be here all offseason long talking Rays baseball. And we hope that you'll be with us all offseason long.
Yeah, we are the only podcast in 2026 talking about Matt Whistler and Brooks Raley.
There's nobody out there. There's nobody out there. There's no podcast that has said those two names in the same sentence. There's nobody out there. So if that's your thing, if you're into that, which if you're a Rays fan, you're probably into that, this is the show for you.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, we appreciate all of you guys joining us today on this Sunday. We're going to be back throughout the rest of the offseason, bringing you more. Hopefully some Rays news will occur
Hopefully.
We'll see. The big guys are still out there, so we can still delude ourselves into believing that they'll go get one of them. And whether they do or whether they don't, it's still going to be Raise Up.
Raise Up.
Thank you for tuning into this presentation by RBLI Sports. On your way out of the stadium, please remember to like and subscribe.